Okay, well, good afternoon. I'll officially call the board meeting to order. If you could join me in standing and saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
To say that was a perfect setting for the flag today.
Right.
Lynn, if you could do the trustee roll call.
Trustee Davis is absent. Trustee Doherty?
Here.
Trustee Dye?
Here.
Trustee Freckleton?
Here.
Trustee Holness?
Here.
Trustee Howard?
Here.
Trustee Lloyd?
Here.
Trustee Lubai?
Here.
Lynn, is there any public participation today?
No requests.
Great, thank you. I have several items on the consent agenda. Anybody want to pull a consent agenda item? You get a motion then?
Move so approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Dr. Labasso, over to you.
Thank you. It's been a busy month and a few weeks since our last board meeting. We posted several accreditation bodies. We had the nursing accreditation on site. I'm pleased to say we did quite well, passing with flying colors. We'll get official notification soon, as well as our engineering technology program. Our BSET had an ABED review, which also went well. And the FDLOE monitoring visit for our Perkins program, adult education Perkins program. So, and everything went extremely well. And there's always learning opportunities when you have accrediting bodies come on campus and check your processes and your policies and your programs. I did make it out to the Volusia County delegation meeting in DeLand to present our legislative priorities back on the 6th. We were able to kick off and have our, after 1 year of being off, we had our homecoming event. And it was just, I think a great success. We had an outdoor barbecue and some academic tables out there and a couple of soccer matches and things like that. So it was a nice opportunity. And we had a movie night. Students came out to watch the movies under the landing. So it was a great event. Good to see students out there and enjoying the campus. The residence hall, if you haven't been on campus, is marching along. We had a housing corporation meeting prior to this. And where they approved our the lease contract that goes between the housing corporation and the students, and as well as a cancellation fee program and that kind of stuff. But we the construction is on time and in budget, so we're pleased about that. We have received, I think, in total 250 some odd applications so far. And if you remember, there's 252 beds, and we're only in early part of November. So we're really pleased about the interest that we have, and not surprised to me, I did predict this amongst certain circles, that we have a lot of applicants from Volusia and Flagler County who want that opportunity to live on campus and access that. So again, just completely fitting of our mission, and we're pleased with the progress there. We had our operational audit exit conference with Dr. Howard, and overall went extremely well. And our COVID task force is meeting, and again, with the downward trend and positive news in our community here, as well as the state, we're looking to revise our mask guidance, as there are guidances. So we are currently expected, and when you can't keep distance, to recommend it. And we came up with a color-coded system, red, orange, and then yellow to be option, and then someday hopefully it'll all go away. So just wanted to bring you up to that, and that'll be communicated officially in the next day or so to both staff and students. That concludes my update. So I will move on to any questions.
You have a second item.
I do. So going to my next item on page 76, I would need approval for the naming of the Keith R. Kennedy Conference Room.
A motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
This motion is second. Any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, thank you. We had a great celebration of life for Keith on campus, and you know, we notified the family of the recommendation, and they were beyond thrilled with that honor. And it's a room that Keith and I, back in our early days, used to meet weekly there in our division, so it was a fitting location for that. So thank you for that approval. And that, Mr. Chair, concludes my update.
Yeah, I'll just mention, at the memorial, I talked to several students, including the one who just did one of the readings, Gabriel.
Gabriel, yeah.
Yeah, and it's amazing how many lives Keith Kennedy touched. I mean, I got to know him briefly, but not for a long period. And just some amazing stories about how, you know, at this point in his life, you could say, you know, a high-ranking administrator in the college, but basically, you know, would take the time out of his day for any student that needed just someone to talk to, someone to, you know, help work through an issue. And you know, it's a great inspiration for, I think, all of us to continue to think about. So I know it was a great service, done very well.
Thank you.
Brian, I noticed we're going to be sad not to hear you read policies today. We may not sleep well tonight, but maybe next time. We'll move on now to the facilities section.
Good afternoon, everyone. Okay, our first item that I have heard under facilities is the approval of the construction at risk contract for the Deltona campus new building 2. So we finished our review of the different companies and came up with our short list, which was actually awarded at the last board meeting. This is for the contract with them, and at this point it's for pre-construction services for that Deltona building 2 with Ajax, and I need the recommendation of the board for that one.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. Excuse me, Chris, do we have a rendering for them this month?
No, I do not. I don't have a rendering, but we will, we're gonna have a, we just went over a bunch of design concepts. Right now they're working on a new rendering, which will be kind of the suggestions from Dr. Labasso and the facility advisory board on the elevations. We'll bring that to you to take a look at those as well once those are put together.
So yeah, we'll have something for you. I wasn't sure if it was going to be ready this month, or but we'll have that shortly. It's going to be a neat looking building, I think.
Yeah, I think we may even do another workshop where we go over the final plan and the building design. Okay. But it's great with that one that just passed. The contractor is on very early in this process, which will help us make sure our budget stays in conformity along that design process. So they're in tune. Ajax right now is building a school right here in Volusia County, actually here in Daytona Beach Elementary School. So they've got their finger on the pulse of where the construction material costs are. So we'll be making informed design decisions as we move forward. Okay, the next item that I have I think this is the third. It may be the final installment we'll see for HERF fund for HVAC work that will be done using CARES Act funding and COVID response.
Motion to approve.
Second. A motion and a second. Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. And our last item that we have is for architectural design services. This is for the multi-purpose athletic field off of White Street. We're in right now just looking at an architect to start talking about what that design and the scope of work may be for that field. We had I think 6 architects respond to that one. The winning architect was Borelli and Partners. So with your approval, we'll start moving forward with them to define what that scope of work will be for the multi-purpose field.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you very much. That's all I have for today.
Great, thank you. Marty?
Okay, good afternoon. Got a few items today. We're going to start with the financial report through October 31st. We're now one third of the way through the year, or 33%. So as of October 31st, we've collected $12.7 million, or 47% of our tuition and fee revenue, $14.9 million, or 28% of our state revenues, $2.1 million, or 33% of our other revenues, and $1.9 million, which is 100% of the board-approved transfers. So in total, for 4 months into the fiscal year, we've now collected $31.6 million, or 36% of our $88.5 million operational budget. Okay, looking at the expense side, again, a third of the way through the year, we've expended $18.1 million, or 27% of our personnel expenses. $13.3 million of our current expenses are either expended or obligated. You can see the breakdown there. We have $7.6 million of true expenditures, another $5.7 million of encumbrances that are tied to open purchase orders. And in capital outlay, we have $574,000 obligated at this point in time. That's 30% of the budget. And actual expenditures of $156,000 and encumbrances of $418,000. So in total, total obligations for this period through October is $31.9 million, or 36% of the overall $88.5 million, budget. And if you back out the encumbrances, at the bottom there is the actual expenditures to date is $25.9 million, or 29% of the budget. So we're tracking right at that, where we should be at 33% through the fiscal year, both sides revenue and the expense side are right on target. Okay, we always do a recap of our operating fund balance. We started the year with a $14.9 million reserve fund balance in Fund 1. Of that, $5.2 million is our 5% state required reserve. $2.4 million is the board designated reserve in Fund 1. And then just over $7 million of unallocated reserves. Additional $205,000 was part of POs that rolled over in Fund 1. And as of the date of this report through October, we have a projected fund balance of just over $9.1 million, or 19.65%. Okay, this chart shows us the comparison year over year from a revenue standpoint. As you can see, we've collected 36% of our overall budget this year. Last year, we were at 41%. I believe I mentioned at last board meeting we had that $4.5 million transfer from Fund 7 into Fund 1 last year, which kind of gave it the spike up to 41%. If you back that out, they would be right in line. We later returned that money back to Fund 7, if you recall. Okay, this chart shows our three-year analysis of tuition and fees and how we're trending. I will remind you, this one in November often shows some spikes because depending on the registration for spring enrollment, the timing, some years it's earlier, some years it's later. So you can see last year definitely had a spike due to timing of registration. So I believe it was opened a little bit earlier last year. We had $14.2 million in total collected at this time last year. We're at $12.7 million this year, which is more comparable to the 1920 year, which was almost 12.9. So it'll level off once we, get a couple months out and we get all our spring registration collected and in the revenue numbers. So maybe by next board meeting, it'll be a little bit more comparative. We are down some with that said, in-state tuition, you can see 8.6 versus close to 9.3 and some of the other areas. Keep in mind, we still have the Higher Education Emergency Relief Funds, the HERF CARES Act money that we can recoup lost revenue, and we'll do just that at the end of each semester. So at the end of the fall, we'll take a snapshot of where we are today versus the baseline year, which we're using 2019-20, and recoup that lost revenue.
If I could comment on that, the you know, one of the things that because when we look at our registration data, it is days out from the semester, and we are looking slightly ahead for spring. And the other number that is encouraging within that number is the new student applications and registrations are up. It's a little early yet, but I'd rather have that sign now than the other sign, because it's always hard to catch up. So hopefully we're starting to see the beginning of, you know, return to school where we were prior to the pandemic. So some early signs that maybe we may start seeing a little turnaround.
Tom, do those trends track with the other colleges in the system? Just in terms of the fall, still seeing an enrollment hit, but spring starting to...
Yeah, you know, last year we were down maybe 5%, and I'd say we were on the better side of that. Most schools were down about 10. This year we are more in the middle, where, you know, I think we're down about 9%, and, you know, I think we're in that middle half. There's schools that are down 12 and 13%, and there's some schools that are down 6 or 7 or 8%. So we're in that middle range this year. So, so I think we're... Yeah, we're probably on the better side of being down, if there is a better side to that. But yeah, it's very similar to what's happening statewide. Actually, I think across the country, if you look at community college enrollment, it's what's happening here in Florida is happening everywhere. I'm not sure what you're doing at Embry-Riddle, but we'll have to. You guys are doing well.
Okay, moving on to our expense comparison year over year, you'll see we're, you know, fairly consistent here. From a personnel standpoint, we've expended 27% versus 26% at the same time last year, 69% of our current expenses versus 62%, and 30% of the capital outlay versus 37% at the same time last year. Okay, moving on to our Fund 7 capital project and construction funds. This again is a snapshot of our control accounts and our source of funds in Fund 7, everywhere from capital improvement fees, board designated, some loan funds, PICO, and the various sources. So in summary, we started the year with $45.4 million in that Fund 7 as a whole. We've received another $4.2 million to date, and we've expended or encumbered another $7.2 million, leaving us with a fund balance per October of $42.4 million, so still a very healthy Fund 7 reserves across the board. Of the $42.4 million, $18.1 million is committed to date, and the other $24.3 is uncommitted and available. Okay, this is our projects that are currently in progress. Most of you are aware of this list. The top two are two of the newer projects that we brought forward during the budget season, the multipurpose field. I think that one was one Chris just touched on. We're doing the planning phases now. And then the Daytona campus infrastructure improvements is also about to get underway. So those are the two new projects. The others are just existing projects that we've had carry over from the prior year. And the estimated cost of those eight projects is $33.7 million, which the budgets are set aside for. And that concludes my financial report through October. If there's any questions or comments, I'd be glad to take them. Okay. All right, next item up is our annual financial report for fiscal year 2021. This is what we bring to the board each year for informational purposes. It's currently in unaudited form. The auditors will come in. I think they're going to start just before the holidays, and then it'll carry over as we get back into January, February, and sometimes later into the year. But this package, you know, I got to give a shout out to my staff. Each year it truly takes a village and a team, and that's just what they are. We've had some turnover in the department, as most of you are aware, and we've gotten some of those pieces, you know, filled again, and I just can't say enough about the team that pulls together to get this done each year in a short amount of time. You know, they continue to come out with new GASB standards and note disclosures that we have to do, but yet it's the same cutoff and the same deadline to the state each year. So from June 30th to right up through mid-August, end of August, it's go time in the finance department and business services, closing out purchase orders, reconciling accounts, bringing everything together. So I just want to, again, give kudos to my staff, Tina Myers, my controller, Lisa Sagunro, my assistant controller, Jamana El-Ghali, Director of Financial Services, and Elaine Teal, Executive Director of Business Services, and all of the staff under there that report up through them to me. I couldn't do it without them. They did a great job again this year with limited resources, and just a job well done. So I wanted to point that out before we get into my short presentation that lasts a couple of minutes when this package really lasts, you know, takes a months to pull together. So just a few highlights on the financial report, the AFR for last year. We had some increases in revenues, you know, namely the auxiliary enterprises. We got a bump of $4.7 million. If you recall, last year we signed that Sonic Wave license agreement, and they gave us that signing bonus or incentive of $5 million. So that's what that is. Landed right in our Fund 3 auxiliary account. So we're pleased to get that. Next, gifts and grants increased by $7.7 million. That's primarily the HERF funds, you know, the CARES Act money where we've expended and then recouped the revenue or lost revenue in some cases. And then federal and state student financial aid increased by about $932,000. So that was from a revenue standpoint on the operating expenses. We also had some cost savings last year. Personnel, we had a decrease of $3.3 million. Not because we lost a lot of staff or anything of that nature. It's mainly because of our pension and compensated absences, that when those liabilities swing each year, it can cause a decrease or an increase any given year. So this past year, we had a decrease in those liabilities, which caused a decrease in the expense where they're rolled up into the personnel type expenses. Still a good thing, you know, because at the end of the day, you have to book those expenses. So revenue comes in over the expenses. It does beef up our fund balance in any given year. Scholarships and waivers decreased by $1.1 million, and then materials and supplies were down about $1.3 million, primarily due to COVID, just less purchasing of supplies and so forth in the department. This is just a comparison of the 2 years, last year and the year before, of operating revenues. Again, very consistent. The one spike is the auxiliary, which I pointed out, the $5 million that we got because of that license agreement. Non-operating revenue, again, it's a comparison year over year. Very consistent. The one spike is in gift and grants, and again, that's the HERF funding. This next slide shows operating expenses year over year as well. Nothing too alarming. Your first graph, the $70 million versus the $66 million, that was essentially the pension and compensated absences shift that I just spoke about. And then in the middle there in contractual services, that is where the expense went, where we did our emergency aid to our students through the HERF and CARES Act money. That's the area that it landed in, so it shows a spike there. But we were, it's money in, money out, so no net impact on the college. This is simply showing now the balance sheet. Here's the total assets and liabilities and net position. So you like to see the net position go up, and it did go up about $6 million there on the right. That just shows that we're continuously ending the year in a positive situation, being able to sock away some funds in our reserves. Okay, that concludes the annual financial report. Any questions Okay, the next item is the all of our expenditures over $50,000 we bring to the board for information only. This covers both September and October. First one is on your screen is a September, and it includes wires, ACHs, and checks, so every payment going out over $50,000 individually. next one is the month of October. Okay. The next item I had is our tuition fee waivers and exemptions. We have to report to the state of Florida Department of Ed each year our total exemptions and waivers. These are all permitted by Florida statute. And as you can see on the next slide, it breaks it down by category. So near the top is what we call our 54 FTE waivers. That is the one category that went up over the prior year. Reason being, due to COVID, we allowed some retakes for students to retake courses where they either didn't complete or maybe didn't perform as well. So the hit came this year where they came back, did the retake, and we gave them the waiver for tuition for that semester or that same course. So that was up in that $870,000 number. The equivalent last year was just over $700,000. So that, again, was the big spike that stood out to me on this report. In total, $8.1 million of total fee exemptions and waivers. Last year was just over $8 million. So about $117,000 net increase over the prior year. The other big number that stands out, and we've talked about it in the past, is the dual enrollment. It shows up on this report as gross revenue, and at the gross amount, we of course recuperate some of that through the school districts. So the $4,479,000, once we recoup and net it out with the revenue we receive at the lower dual enrollment rate, we're at a deficit of maybe $2.5 million, I think is what it came to this year. So we do recoup some of that, but for this report purpose, we must put it in there at the gross, at the full in-state tuition and fee rate, which is $102.38 per credit hour. The dual enrollment rate is $71.98 per credit hour.
I just want to point out that's, as you can see, it's a significant amount of money that we waive. And, from time to time, the legislature will pass another statute or rule that identifies a group that we waive, and we're happy to do it. But it is, at the end of the day, we're still have the expense side of the equation, and we waive the tuition and dual enrollment. We've been locked into a discounted rate for I don't know how many years. Our regular tuition is $102 a credit hour. We're only getting reimbursed $2 a credit hour. So you see the difference there. So it's $30 plus an hour that we are not realizing with dual enrollment. And up until last summer, we weren't getting any reimbursement for summer that recently passed. So we do get some reimbursement for summer dual enrollment. So it is what it is, but just it's worth noting is we get the conversations with the legislature how we do need that. We love dual enrollment, but it does need to be supported because there is the expense that we incur by providing that service.
Okay. It is a big number. I mean, if you compare it to tuition, for sure, it's a pretty big percentage. It might be helpful for the board if you just down the road to give us a long-term trend, like 5 or 10 years of this versus, say, state revenue. Mm-hmm. It's a great talking point. I mean, we're happy to give these waivers. They're all for good reasons, but in theory, it'd be nice if funding kind of kept up with the game.
Yeah, that's a good point, and we have done that in the past, Dr. Howard, so we'll bring that back to life and the five-year trend or eight-year trend, and so we can see where we're at.
Just from a marketing standpoint, I don't know that, I don't think you get credit, and I don't mean, with all due respect, I don't mean credit like what we're talking about on the financial report, but I don't think you get enough credit in the community for that piece. And so somehow, aside from the few voices in the room, I think there should be some effort made to communicate the investment that we're making. Mm-hmm.
And there's no offset from the Volusia County School District or Flagler County.
So they pay us $72 a credit hour for every student that comes.
All right, but that's it. That's all your
right.
There's no way to make up the
right. No. So, but if you're a graduate and you come, it's $102 a credit hour.
Right.
So that is just a rate that was that came up with the legislature back. Like they, it was originally the I think the might have been the tuition at the time, but then it went up and that stayed locked in. But they don't pay any of the other applicable fees that a student pays, like an activity fee. Yet they are able to participate in SGA and clubs and things like that, the enrolled students. So, so anyway, it's a topic of conversation with the council presidents. You know, quite often that there's a delta there that we are receiving. But I do remind our group, and think there was a time not too long ago that we used to receive zero. So we, you know, over time, you know, made our case to get reimbursed, and we did. And there needs to be some adjustment over time to keep up with the pace of expenses.
I think Randy's point's a good one, just for community awareness, it's in, whether it's in a marketing piece or a brochure or a commercial, because they all are helping, you know, students who need help. But it just,
You said, if I heard it right, that it's a approximately $2.4 million.
We've got reimbursed about $2 million of that $4.5 million, so we're on the hook. Yeah, $2.5 million is about the gap.
I mean, that's worthy of getting some, you know, some positive.
Yeah, it's definitely an investment on our part into dual enrollment.
Yeah, and I would add to that that with such a keen eye on the cost of education and what a significant role we play as an institution in reducing that cost of education, all the more reason for what Randy's talking about.
Yeah.
I think we can play that angle as well.
Well, you know, I think about all these things. So $2.5 million investment through a discounted tuition, you have, we've held the other tuition for book costs, all these things, all these actions, and arguably it's one of the better kept secrets, and I don't think it should be a secret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just to make sure I'm understanding it right, the $2.5 million is just the one line item. I mean, so there really is a $6 million, give or take, in waivers and exemptions that there is no revenue back.
Correct.
I think it'd be interesting to say that's $6 million or so. If we had control of that, how many scholarships could we provide per year, and how many students would we cover that could get a, you know, education if we had those, that money available to us? So
it is
significant.
It is.
That's six times the amount we generate from the foundation. Do about $1 million a year in scholarships out of the foundation.
Okay.
So that usually is a little bit over 100 students a year.
But we didn't address it in our legislative request for 2022.
As a college, no. But it's a talking point for the.
That's what I'm saying.
We need for the system.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Because it applies to all of us. Yeah.
Right.
But Lloyd, that's a great point. It's a talking point we can reinforce if we have the occasion.
Right.
This one does require a motion and approval.
Yes,
I can have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Any other questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, my last item is maintenance and repair funding. As the board's aware, we have not been receiving our PICO funds over the last several years. We were hopeful as a Florida college system this year that we would get some of the maintenance repair, some of the digits funding back restored. That did not pan out. So it left us a little short this fiscal year in our maintenance repair budget in Fund 7. So what we're doing with this memo is asking for an additional $500,000 to be dedicated towards maintenance repair type items that are ongoing to get us through this fiscal year. And it'll come from the board designated funds from Fund 7.
Move approval.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Move on to the academic affairs. Amy?
Good afternoon.
I actually have four items. Dr. Howard, I don't know if you want me to do them together or separately.
Any concerns with together? Do them together.
Okay. The first item is approval of a program closure, the AS in Health Information Technology. We've had low enrollment in this program and difficulty with staffing, but also students can basically get the same job with the certificate than they can with the AS degree, so there's not a lot of incentive to go on to it. We do have another path for those students. They could go into the office program and proceed to a bachelor's that way if they wanted to. That's the first item. We will sunset that and keep the certificate, though. The next item is approval of course deletions. Per state rule, we go through and remove every year any course not taught in the last 5 years. We have 10 courses here. It does not impact any programs. We just ask your approval to remove them from the catalog. The next item is three certificates in AutoCAD and drafting and design. Per state mandate, the credit hours have been changed very slightly by 1 to 2 hours in those three programs. And then lastly, we are happy to announce a new concentration in the Bachelor of Applied Science in Supervision and Management, this one in Healthcare Management. This would be the sixth concentration within the BAS degree. And we think it would be a great opportunity for the health career students to move to a bachelor's degree. And ask for your approval.
So moved.
Second.
Questions or discussion on any of them? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion to pass.
Thank you.
Amy, can you remind us what the concentrations are in? I think it'd be good for the board to know what we have under that management degree.
So one is sort of your basic management.
Yeah.
And then we have hospitality, we have human resource management, project management, supply chain management, and as of now, healthcare management.
If you have any maybe I need to take the supply chain management piece. Sign up right now.
I think Sarah may second that one. But thank you. I just think it's a great menu of options that I think meets our community needs. So it's a nice variety of options for students to pursue focus areas for that bachelor's degree.
That will move on to the constituent heads.
Yes. All righty. So for student government, do we have Adrian Tolles Williams?
I don't see her.
I don't see anyone here. Nope. For administrative council, we have Frank Mercer for Alicia.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity. Frank Mercer, I'm the vice chair of the Administrators Council, and have the pleasure of giving you a couple of quick updates this afternoon. As part of our homecoming celebration, the Administrators Council offered the 5K walk, run, and hobble. I was the hobbler. And I want to congratulate two of our winners, our female winner, Jenny Inslin, and Jenny is a DSC alumni. And then also our male winner, Thomas Broderick, is our male winner, and good news is we were able to generate $2,471 for the Administrators Council Scholarship Fund, and so that's always a joy to do that. We have some very special folks that we'd like to thank. Neil Clemens, who one of our administrators that you know well, organizes the event and really pulls it off and makes it happen. We are always very grateful for the campus safety team and the work that they do to get there early and make sure that we have a safe environment. And Judy Wilson and the cross country team, we want to thank them for their hours of dedication, ensuring that the race was professionally timed and safe for all the different runner types as well. And of course, we want to thank Kristen Hansen and our alumni association who worked tirelessly to make sure that the event was a success as well. Also then, the council held its last meeting of the year on October the 13th. And during that meeting, not only were we briefed on the 5K and the results there, but we are working on three opportunities for a community service project for the administrators. In addition to raising money for the scholarship fund. We feel it's important as administrators to give back to our community outside of the college. And so we are looking at three community service opportunities there that the Administrators Council will do. We'll bring you that information at our next meeting. And then finally, we are looking at options for supporting college employees with textbook costs who are going back to school as well. So thank you very much for your time and happy holidays.
Thank you, Frank.
Those are great causes, by the way. I got a little excited when you started to announce the mail winner because it started out with Tom, and I was saying the president had led the way.
I was going to comment on that. So I did participate and walked most of it. And when I thought I had maybe 200 yards to go, I was walking with Nick Bellino, if you know Nick, from our hospitality program. I said, Nick, you ready for a little jog? He said, sure. Now, if you know Nick, he's as fit can be. So we start to jog, and as I think I'm getting to the entrance of the soccer field where it ends, I'm promptly told, no, you got to go around this way first, and had to go do a lap around the entire parking lot. Then I get into the stadium thinking there's a nice finish line. He's like, no, you got to do a lap around the soccer field before you finish. So by the time, I was pretty much done by the time I got to the end of that. So my 200-yard run became almost probably three-quarters of a mile. So, but it was a great event. You did remind me, and I didn't have it in my notes, and maybe we'll have the teams here at another board meeting. But our cross-country team, our men's team, took first in the region tournament. The women's team took second. Our male runner, Andy, who held the state record, broke his record. And our female, although the team came in second, she finished first individually. And they are in Virginia, I think they're in Virginia now, for the nationals. Our women's soccer team made the regional finals and lost in Melbourne to Eastern Florida State. Our men's team won the regional finals against Eastern Florida State and then went to Virginia and beat Richard Bland College for the South District, and we'll be heading to Texas for the national tournament. That'll be the third time the men's team has made the national tournament in the 6 years of the program. And then on the 15th, for those soccer enthusiasts, we are hosting the women's national tournament right on our campus. We'll have 12 teams from all over the country coming to Daytona Beach to compete. So it's great exposure for the college. Their estimates, is a $500,000 to $600,000 economic boost just on the teams. They can't account for the family that comes into town to travel to watch, as well as there'll be, I'm going to guess for the women because there's more women programs, there'll be about 200 Division I, II, III, NAIA coaches in town to scout our athletes that are here to recruit them to the, so that brings, it's probably over $1 million boost to the local economy to host that tournament. So again, kudos to all of our teams, and we'll keep you posted on both the cross country teams and how they do in nationals, and the men's soccer team who, again, they're heading to Texas for that national tournament. And then again, we're hosting. It's a great environment if you get a chance to come and watch the women play here. Unfortunately, we're not in it, but it'll be a great environment to see the women's Division I program compete right here in our hometown. So it reminded me of a whole bunch of things I didn't update the board on. Thanks, Frank.
Thank you.
And for our Career Employees Association, we have Amanda Schroyer.
I don't see her, and I don't see Billy Joe Dunaway.
Okay. And we don't see Billy Joe. No?
Paul's here.
Okay, for Faculty Senate, though, we have Paul Capps. And I see Paul.
So once again, with your kind permission, I'm going to utilize the time you've allowed me to feature one of our faculty members. We like to feature the faculty members who do such a great job of representing the college, both in the community through their service and throughout academics. in terms of going to conferences and speaking at colleges. I would like to present Dr. Sharish Lala today. Dr. Lala earned his master's of science degree at the University of Florida in 2008. He started working as the academic clinical coordinator here at Daytona State's Occupational Therapy Assistant Program in August of 2009. Since then, Sharish has pursued a career in fieldwork education as a professor and clinical coordinator in the School of Health Careers. During the summers, he often pursues his passion for adventure as a traveling occupational therapist at several locations in Florida, Illinois, and in California. In the past decade, he has been actively involved with the National Board of Certification in Occupational Therapy as a volunteer for certification exam validation and item development. Currently, he serves as an ambassador of the National Board of the State of Florida. In addition, Sharish has presented at various allied health conferences at state and national levels and at various colleges, including here at Daytona State College, at Stetson University, and at Johns Hopkins University. Sharish has attended professional development activities at Columbia University, Colorado State University, the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab in Chicago, and the Brooks Rehabilitation Hospital. In 2018, he was awarded the Outstanding Young Alumnus Award by the University of Florida, Department of Occupational Therapy, for excellence in professional practice and exceptional leadership in the advancement of public health and health professions. In 2021, Dr. Lala graduated with a Doctor of Education degree from Johns Hopkins University and was awarded the Faculty Senate Dr. John Guthrie Jr. Award for Research and Professional Development. So another one of our newly minted doctors. I'd like to present Dr. Sharish Lala.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. It is indeed an honor to stand in front of you and Dr. Bethune's beautiful statue. As a professor and clinical coordinator for the School of Health Careers, I have been a part of the Daytona State College community. The focus, the emphasis, the mission that the college embodies regarding excellence, equity, justice, innovation is what has kept me here since 2009. My current position involves recruiting and advising students in the college's Occupational Therapy Assistant Program. As a first-generation U.S. immigrant and a foreign-trained practitioner, I have attempted to recruit students from diverse backgrounds to address the dearth of minority candidates in our community's health workforce. My doctoral research project at Johns Hopkins focused on using creative experiential training models to address resource shortages and disparities among student groups. My teaching interests stem directly from my clinical and research experiences as a therapist caring for sensitive populations. I am immensely grateful to the Board of Trustees, the DSC Human Resources Department, and the college community for their support in my research and teaching practice. In fall 2019, I was awarded a sabbatical to complete my data collection for the dissertation, and for that, you will always have my gratitude. Over the past couple years, I've collaborated with faculty, staff, and the Office of Professional Development as the Faculty Fellow for Inclusive Excellence. As the fellow, I have networked and supported the faculty to infuse inclusive pedagogy and multicultural educational initiatives across various disciplines here at our college. Earlier this year, my colleagues and I from the Cultural Diversity Committee were featured on the front page of the Daytona Beach News Journal in our efforts to generate awareness about the impact of microaggressions to promote a sense of belonging across all our campuses. Earlier this fall, I was also invited by Dr. Locklear as a panelist on the Council of Instructional Affairs fall meeting to discuss innovative teaching practices that support equity and excellence. The Council on Instructional Affairs is a statewide body of senior academic leaders from the 28 Florida college system institutions. Despite the challenging times in recent months, Daytona State College, its personnel, leaders, and others have allowed me to step forward and lead efforts related to educational ethics, educational policy, evidence-based practice, and quality improvement. I'm excited at the prospect of working with students, administrators, and faculty at the college, and networking with neighboring institutions and industry partners in our efforts for continuous professional learning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That concludes the constituent head updates.
Great, thank you. I'm going to reverse the order real quick and tackle 11C first, really a housekeeping item, just to make an amendment to the deferred compensation plan. If I could have a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second.
Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Great meeting once again. So glad we could have it here. Thanks, Tom, for organizing that. And again, Bob, make sure you pass on our thanks both to you and to the entire statutory committee. You guys did a great job in representing the community, and we're happy to play a small role in that. A couple other things I just want to highlight real briefly. If you haven't been over to the building in a while, maybe you came for the grand opening of the statue, but I think the work that's taking place with the park area is just phenomenal. And you know, the painting of the building, the new carpet, the entryway out front. If you look out back, you start to see the walkways and the what they're doing to the point out there. So I really feel like this is going to be just a tremendous opportunity for the college and the community to work together on some hopefully pretty neat initiatives that I think would benefit everybody. So I want to thank you for the legislative request card. I think this is a great idea because you don't have to carry the whole book around, but if you have this in your back pocket or wallet or purse or wherever, you can quickly look at it if you have the opportunity to help talk to a legislator or a influencer on some of the needs of the college. So I'd encourage everybody to try to remember to carry this around, and you know, if you're at an event, whatever it be, it might come in handy. And then finally, just Veterans Day tomorrow, I want to thank the college for all the work you guys do to support veterans who are students. And I know we have a few of our board members, Lloyd, and so just always an important day to me, so I wanted to mention that. That I will turn it over to Vice Chair Holness.
Just to follow up on just sitting here and just looking at the statue, it's just to think where it's going to finally land in Statutory Hall and the importance it's going to have on our state. Marty, I want to thank you and your staff. We didn't give you a lot of questions because of the clarity of the report. You're able to read it, it's precise, it's well written. And it's easy to follow. So I don't think because it's questions, but we are all able to read and clearly understand what was there. I sit here in awe, and I can't take my eyes off that statue. I keep looking at the power that it just eludes to all of us. But and to add the students that we had in the workshop, we're all about our students, mm-hmm. and to have them as part of that whole presentation and to hear the words, they add so much. So, and it's, they were both telling again how they want, what they want to do, and the encouragement that they received from you, Tom, as president, and from the board, it just meant so much to them. So it's just another way again to send thank you for us to highlight our students. Thanksgiving is coming up. Wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. For me, it's a special day. I got married on Thanksgiving Day. So I'm going to having my 25th anniversary. So Thanksgiving Day is always, it's always special being with family and friends. But for my husband and I, it's a special day for us because this coming one makes our 25th anniversary. So
congratulations.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob?
Well, I said some remarks before, but I want to just say how special it is and thank everyone on this board for their support in making this statue here a reality. And to echo some of the things that Chairman Howard said, what's happening around the News Journal Center is pretty exciting. So this is just one piece of what's happening around and through the park. And we have very, very bright days ahead, but your location, choice of location was fantastic. maybe it's just a dumb luck, but it's going to be really exciting to see what happens with the Esplanade in years to come in this facility and the opportunities for students. You know, I took a photo at the Daytona State College presentation on Sunday, and I'll have to show it to you. I wish we could put it up on a screen, but it's about a six-year-old girl taking a picture of the statue, and my wife was like, oh, I gotta get a picture of this. And so she has a picture of this little girl taking a picture, and she'll be able to talk for generations, I mean, her kids and grandkids, about that opportunity when she was here or when she's on her eighth grade field trip to Washington, D.C., and tell kids, I was there. I saw the statue right there. The bronze statue, I don't want to minimize that either. It's going to be a touchstone for those that never get a chance to go to Washington, D.C., for whatever reason. And that will be the touchstone and a connection for all time here in Daytona Beach, and that's important. Lastly, I just want to say a big shout out to President Labasso. When we talked about this exhibit here in Daytona Beach, it was very close to not happening at all. We didn't really have a whole lot of options. And, you know, when talking to Tom, it's never a no and let me try to convince you why. It's always, let's figure out how to get to yes. Let's figure out how to do it. And so in large part, because of your willingness and enthusiasm about the historic opportunity we had for our community, it is here. Thank you, and thanks to all of you.
Okay.
Well, I think every one of us are going to want to say something about this amazing statue, of course, but also the presentation that Nancy Lohman did. Along with our students, was just motivating, emotional, and really just recognize the great accomplishments. But also, I don't know about you, but you always learned something new, and you picked up other new pieces here today as well. And Bob, I know you downplayed this, but it takes a team to make this happen. I know you wanted to deflect it to Nancy today, but because that's the leader and the humility that you have. But your role in this was very key also. And thank you and the whole team really that made this come together for our community and really for our nation as a whole. So it's not often we get to touch the nation. And so thank you for that. Tom touched on this earlier. It's really exciting watching the student housing piece come together and the amount of momentum now that we're building with the interest in this. And we took a big leap forward with going with 252 rooms. And there's some other colleges around the state that maybe went with 100 rooms or thereabouts. And now they're already looking at phase two and studying that. So it's truly exciting. But also I want to do a shout out to Chris Wainwright, Marty Cass, Charisse, Eric DiAquino, and I'm trying to remember, I'm missing Elaine. Thank you. What a great job they're doing for our team also in terms of bringing this all together. And then finally, just a quick note, we took advantage of an opportunity because we had a couple of our songwriters coming into town for a couple of other events. And we are doing a fundraiser for the foundation on Friday night at Plantation Bay. If anybody's interested, please contact Tim Norton or myself. Tickets are $100 a piece and includes your dinner with all the proceeds, net proceeds going to the foundation.
Thank you, Gary. Lloyd?
Today's a heavy, heartfelt day for me because I just lost my sister and the third of her fourth daughter. They live in Great Britain. And if you don't believe that you can get COVID after getting vaccinated, hear their story. They both were vaccinated. And my niece, she was diagnosed with MS, and she was taking care of her elder sister's house while she was down in Barbados. and my sister went to visit her. She's a nurse, or was. She retired from being a nurse, and she didn't look too good, and she said, let me take you to the hospital. Not knowing that she had COVID, and she passed it on to my sister, who had underlying health issues. So my sister passed away about 3 weeks ago. My niece just passed away on Sunday. And I'm just waiting to hear the live stream of what they're going to do, because there's three girls and a husband, because she just celebrated her 50th wedding anniversary in July. And it's just unbelievable. But I encourage everybody, even if you're vaccinated, you're in crowds, wear your mask, because you never know whether or not if you have underlying or whatever that you can catch. But it's great to be here today. I was here on Sunday when they had a little program, and it's just wonderful to see the statue, see people coming in, taking pictures. Tom, to you and your staff, you do a heck of a job in picking up and saying, yes, we can, yes, we can. And it's just the nature of you and your team, because I've always said, the leader transcends to his team what has to be done. So congratulations to you and your team for what you do for this great institution. And here we are in front of Mary McLeod Bethune's statue that's going to go to Washington. Thanks to you and thanks to everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Randy?
I think I should say pass. No, honestly, you know, sit here, listen to the comments, and I know how hard Bob has worked on all of this. I know it from the beginning, and another job that we had, you know, I think the thing that I look at the expression on her face, and there's a kindness and a sweetness is amazing, but at the same time, it translates to that quote, you know, and I think that's what we do here at Daytona State. Invest in the human soul. Who knows, it might be a diamond in the rough. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that's necessarily, you know, it's not full of multiple syllable words, but boy, what a just a powerful statement. And in today's times, you know, it's pretty good advice, right? Invest in the soul. Who knows? It may be a diamond in the rough. So, and further than that, when you think about Daytona State, Embry-Riddle, we have an interesting dynamic going on here. You know, there's the namesake of one of our colleges. There's an employee of the other college across the street, and we're hosting it here. I think that's a pretty good statement about how to get along. So congratulations.
Thank you. Sarah?
I hate one last. Everybody else has already said so much good stuff.
So there's always pass.
I'm going to give a lawyer, a banker, and a car guy.
Oh, wow. at least you said guy, not salesperson.
No. So one thing, I'm a transplant.
There's a joke somewhere.
I'm a transplant, and I can tell my kids so much about West Virginia history, but I can't tell them anything about Florida history. So I really like the fact that this is going into a K-12 program. You know, I'm not alone being a transplant, and there's so many other kids that probably still don't, I know they don't know who she is, but they're going to learn. They need to learn. So that to me is one of my favorite mm-hmm. things about the whole thing. About all three of the schools here, I sat through a program yesterday with the Southeast Volusia Manufacturing Technical Coalition Group, and it was on space, the economy, and the lagoon. But one of the things they really touched on was the fact that space is coming in the next 5 years. Huge growth in Southeast Volusia, but they leaned heavy on the education that we have here in Daytona with Embry-Riddle, Daytona State, and utilizing all of our resources to grow what's coming and to sell it. So it was just kind of neat to sit there and know that I get to be a part of both, and that they're all looking at Daytona State mm-hmm. to put out people and be a resource. And I know we'll be there, yep. No doubts. So everybody have a happy Thanksgiving.
Okay, thank you. With that, we will adjourn the meeting, and we will meet again in January, but hopefully we'll see each other before then.
We have a dinner scheduled. Yeah, we have our December dinner.